Good afternoon and good afternoon and evening for those who are dialing in from the East Coast or the West Coast of the United States, and good morning to those in Asia who are getting up bright and early. My name is Brett Evans and I'll be running through the webinar today for the 2019 Australian Federal Budget. It's pretty safe to say that not the most exciting times for Australian expats or Australians in general, but as we've always said in the past, you know, when it comes down to these sort of events, there is a real dollar impact in your wallet. And tonight and today and this morning, we'll be running through some of the key issues that have been outlined overnight. Just a couple of housekeeping issues. You'll see that there's a questions box that you can actually ask any questions. What I'm going to do is run through the six key points in this webinar that were announced overnight that will affect Australian expats. If you do have any questions, I'll be taking those at the end. So please, by all means, ask your questions and don't put your hands up because it's a bit easier to answer questions as we go through. So as we're running through the webinar, just put your questions up on the screen and then we'll go through those questions one by one and answer those at the end. Not a massive amount of changes overnight, so I'm not expecting this to go for a long period of time. It all depends on the Q&A at the end, but generally speaking, I think the key points will probably take us about 20 or 30 minutes. Let me just start sharing my screen now for you guys. Okay, can I just get everyone to confirm that they can see the screen there? Fantastic. Thanks, Tony. Let me just have a glass of water. It's been a long night last night going through all this information, and as I said, it's not the most exciting of information to go through. Okay, so as those who've dialed into webinars before will understand, there's always a disclaimer that we have to provide. Not that we're running through any advice as such in this webinar, but we always have to put this up to keep the legal eagles happy. Obviously, any information we provide here is general in nature. It's not personal advice, and we sincerely encourage you to seek professional advice from a licensed financial advisor and or tax accountant to determine how this may affect your personal circumstances. So running through the quick questions here, obviously, who is Atlas? We've been around since 2011. And this is our eighth year of operation. We're the leading provider of Australian expat financial advice, and believe it or not, we're the only ones who do this full time. So we're very busy with the Australian diaspora overseas. We've won a number of domestic and international awards for the service that we provide to Australian expats in over 28 countries. We haven't done a tally recently, but right now we're just sitting over 28 countries. With our name alludes to our mindset. We are global in our focus, and we're proud to provide this service to Australian expats throughout the world. What we just want to run through here is why you need to tread carefully when it comes to the budget, and the reason being is twofold, and I'll sort of allude to that in the next slide. First one is we are obviously on the cusp of going into an election. So obviously these are policies announced by the federal government who's in-house. That may change next month, so we'll be keeping everyone up to date on what's going on there. But obviously any of the announcements that have been relayed overnight, and obviously we're talking about today, doesn't mean it's necessarily in force. It obviously has to pass through Parliament first. Okay, so people are obviously asking overnight, you know, what sort of budget is this? We sort of call it a bit of a Goldilocks budget, and by that we mean the government could have held back in spending and brought the federal budget into surplus this calendar year, this financial year, I should say, that 2018-2019. However, they've decided to make a number of changes and announcements that will obviously keep us in a slight deficit of about $7 billion for the 2018-2019 financial year. However, in saying that, they've offered a number of carrots, which we'll go through, to try and make themselves look more appealing come election time next month. Right now, we believe that the election is going to be called for either the 11th or the 18th of May. It can't go past the 18th of May. If it does, then what's going to happen is they'll have to have two separate elections for both the House of Representatives and also the Senate. For those who are already enrolled as an overseas voter, be ready and just keep those dates in mind. So going through the first one, which is always the most one that people want to talk about the most, how does it affect personal income tax cuts? Now, there hasn't been any changes to the non-resident marginal tax rate. For those who are resident or tax resident from ATO purposes, there have been a number of changes, and also this will affect those who are coming back to Australia in the years to come. So what we've seen is an extension of the personal income tax cuts that were announced in the 2018 federal budget. Also, too, we've seen a number of changes with respect to the low and middle income tax office offset allowances. Originally, it was announced to be $530 per person, and this is being increased to $1,080 per person, which is obviously $2,160 for those dual income families. And this is for people who are earning less than $90,000. This was pretty much in response to Labor's proposal. They were in the lead up to the budget announcing their own proposals, and obviously the coalitions brought this forward to try and trump them going into an election. From 1st of July 2022, the upper threshold for the 90% tax bracket will be increasing from 41 to 45. So that's a great result for those who are on either low incomes or certainly for expats coming back into the country, those who are earning an Australian-based income through a partial way through the year. So that's going to help you out there. And then from the 1st of July 2024, the 32.5% marginal tax bracket will be reduced back down to 30%, and the 37% tax bracket will also be abolished, as it's been announced in the 2018 federal budget. So what this means is we're going to have like a mega bracket. Essentially what it means is for those who are earning between $45,000 and $200,000, everyone will be on a 30% marginal tax bracket. Works out to be about 2 in 3 workers will be on that tax bracket from 2024. That's obviously on the proviso of the fact that the Australian Coalition gets through and all these budget recommendations get through as well too. So to us, you know, we like this because it reverts to a more simplification of the marginal tax rates. It also helps for those who experience bracket creep where they may be offered a better position or a better salary package as part of their job, and it can sometimes force them up into the next bracket, which doesn't actually mean they have any more take-home income because they've jumped into a higher marginal tax bracket. So we like these sort of changes because, you know, what we're seeing out of this now is maybe a inclination or an encouragement for Australians to work more, to earn more, and by doing that, they're not going to be penalised by going into a higher tax bracket. So essentially, this is the breakup of where the tax rates sit now. So from 2018-19 through to 2023-24, obviously we can see that the 90% tax bracket's lifting up there in 2024 to 45,000. If you look down here at the from 1 July, you can see a simplification of that those tax brackets. Essentially, nil tax rates up to 18,200, a 90% tax bracket from 18,000 up to 45,000, and this is that super tax bracket we're talking about from 45,000 up to 200,000. Okay, so superannuations in the past has been a bit of a plaything for governments. This year, I'm pleased to see that, you know, we're not seeing so much tinkering. When we do see this tinkering, it does discourage or dissuade people from using super, which both for residents and non-residents is still one of the most tax-effective ways to provide for your retirement. So let's just run through a couple of the key issues here. The no work test is being extended to the age of 66. This is a great, great result. Essentially, what the work test is for most people who are going through their working life, they're obviously employed. So what that means is they're able to contribute to their super fund by way of a non-concessional contribution. In the past, what's happened is once you've reached age 65, then you no longer are able to, from that point onward, you have to satisfy the works test, which is working 40 hours in any 30-day period in order to make that non-concessional contribution. Now we've seen that age lined up. You can now do it. You do not need to meet an age test at age 65 and 66 now, which is great, because what it sort of does, it lines the age brackets with the age pension as well too, which is 67. So should the coalition be re-elected and should they pass this through government, that'll be effective from the 1st of July 2020. Once again, we see this as a great result. Not that the works test was hard to achieve for expats, but from our point of view, there's no point going through any unnecessary requirements when, you know, really it wasn't a great barrier to making contributions anyway. The bring forward rule has been extended to age 66. This is a great result as well. Essentially, what the bring forward rule is you can make a non-concessional contribution of up to $100,000 per year. However, what you're able to do under the bring forward rule is make 3 years worth of contributions in 1 year. So let's say, for example, it's currently 2018, 2019 tax year. You're able to put in $100,000, which is your yearly allowance for this year, but you're also able to put in another $200,000, which is the next 2 years worth of non-concessional contributions. So essentially, you're able to contribute up to $300,000 in any tax year using the bring forward rule. In the past, what was happening was you could only do that up until age 64, and then once you hit age 65, then you're only able to use the single year, which is $100,000 per year. Now what they're doing is they're extending this up to age 66, which means that essentially in age 66, you're able to make another 3 years worth of contributions, which essentially takes you up to age 69. Once again, we're all for the government encouraging people to contribute to their super accounts and provide for retirement. Obviously, with the non-concessional limits reducing over the last couple of years, certainly down from $180,000 to $100,000, Australian expats are finding it a little bit more difficult in getting money into super, especially when they've been overseas for a period of time. Should the coalition once again be elected and this legislation pass through government, that'll be effective from the 1st of July 2020. Spousal contributions have been extended to age 74, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we do like this as well. And the reason being is we do see a large imbalance between super balances between husbands and wives or working partners and non-working partners, and that can be due to a number of reasons. First one is normally having kids. The second one too is if you are an expat and you move to a country where the spouse is not able to work due to visa requirements, quite often we see the super balances drop back as a result of that. Essentially what this means is now you're able to contribute to your spouse's super account as long as they're below the age of 75. So anything 74 and below. A good example of what can be done here is, say, for example, you might have an expat who goes on to converts his super account into an allocated pension, and that allocated pension, you know, he might be 65, 66 years of age. Under an allocated pension, you can draw down a minimum of 4%, but obviously more. You're able to draw down, say, $300,000, and as long as your spouse is below the age of 75, then you're able to put that money into their super account. And so especially if that spouse is 65 or 66, they don't need to meet the works test, and you can also use the bring forward rule. So we're finding this is a great strategy for clients when we're trying to equalise and balance out the super balances. And this is also a key consideration now that we have the $1.6 million super cap inside super. As always, this is effective on the 1st of July on the predication that the coalition gets elected into government. This is one that probably won't affect the older expats out there, but certainly will affect the younger expats. So there's a new package being brought through called Protecting Your Super. And what the bill proposes is to prohibit trustees from offering insurance on an opt-out basis for new members under the age of 25 who open an account on or after October 2019, and members when that balance is below 6,000. Essentially, what this is there for is to avoid the erosion of super balances. And how this works is you need to now opt in to get that insurance, because obviously those insurance premiums for life and TBD insurance does come out of your super account, and it can erode the balance, especially when that balance is quite small. These measures are proposed to commence on the 1st of October 2019. Now, how this will affect Australian expats is quite often when you go overseas, you may not want to continue to use your a particular super fund. However, when you're unable to obtain any sort of life or TBD insurance outside, you may be reliant upon using that default super that's in your existing existing super fund. So what we need to make sure is that, and we'll just go to the next one, in order to ensure that your super fund is still active or considered active, what we need to make sure is that we're not seeing any, we've got to make sure we're seeing contributions and some sort of activity on that account. And the reason being is if you keep a small balance inside super just to retain insurance, for example, and there's no other activity on that account, then based on these new proposals, if after 16 months nothing's happened, then the ATO will define this as an inactive account, and it will consolidate your inactive account with your active account. Now, for those of you out there who have lost super and can't find it, this is a great result, because what's going to happen is as long as you have an active super account, what's going to happen is the ATO is going to take any lost super that's reported them by the super funds and automatically consolidate with your active account. So that's a great result, but we just need to be careful on the insurance side. So continue to talk to your Atlas advisor. It's obviously an ongoing conversation that we will have with our clients to ensure that any insurances that are still inside small balance super accounts are retained. Exchange of information. Now, you know, those who've been on the podcast, the webinars, following our blog posts over time will certainly be aware of the exchange of information policies that have been introduced around the world. That includes the Common Reporting Standard and also the FATCA agreement with the United States. This new list of countries that are going to be part of this exchange of information is a good result for expats. And the reason being is, yes, these jurisdictions will be reporting your information back to the ATO, but what it means is for those who have any investments in Australia, and by way of shares, managed funds, ETFs, because these countries haven't a double taxation agreement with Australia, nor have been part of this exchange of information, what it's meant is you've had 30% withholding tax deducted from those investment incomes that are coming out. By joining this list from the 1st of January 2020, what it means is that non-resident withholding tax rate of 30% now reduces down to 15%. So that's a good result for expats. Obviously, there's other ways we use to reduce or avoid that 15%, but today is not the day for running into those strategies. So if you live in any one of these countries here, then that's actually a good result. As long as you're doing the right thing, you've got nothing to hide from the those jurisdictions passing your information on to the ATO. Australia's announced on the 28th of March that they have signed up a double taxation agreement with Israel. There's a number of expats in Israel, so this is a good result. Essentially what it means is that the DTA will essentially handle any double taxation of any sort of taxable events, whether it's income or capital gains between the two jurisdictions, and obviously try and avoid any excess tax that you'll have to make. And this is the big one that we've been watching out for. As everyone would know, in the 2017 federal budget, they announced that the main residence exemption was going to be removed for non-residents. And due to woeful governance, politicking, what do you want to call it, we've been sitting in limbo. Those proposals were meant to be passed through meant to come into effect on the 1st of July 2019, so only in a couple of months' time. It did pass through the lower house with the House of Reps, and then once it hit the Senate, it has not proceeded any further. The last two sitting days for the Senate were yesterday and today. And when we look at the list of bills to be considered by the senators, the main resident exemption changes were not listed there. So what we were worried about was, because even though we saw the Assistant Treasurer last month announce that, you know, or insinuate, I should say, that they're not going to proceed with that, we saw no formal announcement from Canberra with respect to how those changes are going to be made. Are they going to push them through? And so on and so forth. We were hoping to see an official announcement that they're dropping it. But we haven't seen that announcement, and we were circumspect that a new Mark II version of that bill was going to be announced last night. So it hasn't been announced. It's not on the Senate bill, so expats can rest easy. However, in saying that, it doesn't mean it can come back later on. So that's something we'll watch carefully. We'll make sure that we... you know, providing announcements to expats down the track. But long story short is expats can breathe a sigh of relief for the time being. Obviously, there's going to be no voting on by the Senate this week, which means that it's not going to be coming into effect as of the 1st of July 2019. But be warned, because I think we saw strange conviction from Canberra when wanting to push this through. So it's something that we're saying to clients right now is, you know, just beware, be alert, but not, be alarmed, but not aware, or not alarmed. So it could be something that's going to come down the track, but for the time being, it does look like it's going to be off the table. So that's a great win for expats. So guys, that's the 20-minute appraisal of the budget from last night. Now I'd like to throw it open to any questions that anyone has, and certainly happy to answer any questions on the budget, but like these webinars always do, they always spin off into other areas as well too. So while we've got the time available and your good selves are online, please feel free to start asking your questions, and more than happy to start running through those. Just while we're waiting for those questions to come through, we always encourage everyone to follow us on these different social mediums. They are a brilliant way that we're able to use the internet to pretty much broadcast changes very quickly. You know, more often than not, when a change is announced, we'll pick it up that day. And if we see it's pertinent and relating to Australian expats, then what's going to happen is we can broadcast it that day. So geography and distance is no barrier now for Australian expats to obtain advice, so, or just be informed and aware of what changes may be going through. So please come through, follow us on these pages, and stay informed and stay up to date. So, okay, so just going through here. Okay, so first question is from Sarah. So she's just asking, what are the chances of the coalition getting through in this financial in this upcoming election? To be honest with you, up until February, I would have said very slim. But just sort of taking the temperature of the voting populace and where the different parties are standing right now, and obviously looking at how the New South Wales elections went through just recently, I would say that the coalition's probably scraped back in front. We saw from the low income tax allowance, that's a direct shot across the bow to Labor's proposals, and that's, to us, is going to be something that we're going to see a lot of that tit for tat going on in the lead up to this election. So if I was a betting man, I would say coalition by a hair, but a lot can happen, as we all know, in the lead up to elections. So certainly there's a number of big changes that Labor has announced that they'd like to push through, and those would certainly affect expats. The big one being obviously the negative gearing allowances and the cutback of the 50% capital gains discount for assets held longer than 12 months. Both of those do have very large implications for expats. So, okay, so Alan's got a question here. If the capital gains bill returned, how long would it take to affect, e.g. 1 to 2 years? Look, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think the previous bill is anything to go by. They announced it in 2017, and we're still sitting here today, in unknown land. So if it was quite a fair and a reasonable bill, then normally I would expect it takes anywhere between 6 to 9 months to go through. And then realistically speaking, they should give expats up to 2 years from that point of time or from the date that it's announced. So let's say, for example, something is announced. Well, obviously it won't be this budget, but it might be next budget, which would be 2020. Then you'd hope to see some sort of common sense rules coming about giving expats till 2022, 2023. You know, because property isn't the most liquid of assets, and it obviously takes a long time for that information to be disseminated through expats throughout the world, in order for them to make informed decisions and the right decisions, you'd have to say that, you know, they'd need a long lead-up time. I know the Senate committees do not like retrospective bills, and that's one of the biggest things with that man-res exemption change was the fact that it could have dated back to 1986 when capital gains tax was introduced. So it's something that, you know, it's probably the most ill-thought-out of policies that I've ever seen in my life, and I dare say that if the government has a second go at it, there'll be a lot more consultation going on, because there was about 15 different areas that they didn't even consider that, you know, I guess they considered unintended consequences. So just a message here from Tara. Thanks, Brett. Great summary. I agree. It's a bit hard to get excited about the changes when there's so much uncertainty about whether they'll be realised into law. Spot on, Tara. You know, from our point of view, it is a bit like shooting in the dark. I think the fact that there were no major announcements that affect expats is a good thing, because all we wanted to see was a bit of settling of policies. You know, we do see these sort of things. Something for the fact file, this will be, if we do get into a surplus in the 2019-2020 financial year, this will be the first time that the federal budget's been in surplus since the smartphone was invented. So it has been a long time. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of moving parts when they forecast whether the budget's going to be in surplus or deficit, tax receipts, all these sort of things. You know, in Australia, the Australian dollar, and also to the commodity prices, do have a very large effect on our tax receipts. So if we do see, you know, commodity prices hold up, then, and obviously the current rate of GDP growth, employment creation continues, then we can expect to see that surplus continue. But you know, I don't like to look out as far as the government does, because things can change very quickly. And obviously, as we've seen in the US, now we have the Fed indicating that they will not be raising rates any further for the rest of the calendar year, as we see growth moderating in both Europe, China, and also to the United States. Okay, so running through any other questions we've got here. Okay, Tim's has sent through a question regarding moving back to Australia. Tim, essentially, you know, his question relates to when moving back to Australia, you know, what are these changes that are going to affect him? Once again, it comes back to if the government gets elected, it also comes back to what is passed through. So, you know, as the lawyers like to say, pari passu, all things being equal, if all these changes do get through, then you can expect to be able to rely upon those tax rates based on your you know, your income that you're declaring in that period of time. Obviously, a big question we often get is, if someone comes back in January, you know, are they taxed at the full rate for the financial year? The answer is no. And the reason being is because your income gets taxed at a marginal tax rate, which assumes you've been there for the full 12 months. But if you only come back in January, then you've only been there for 6 months. So that's when, obviously, you'll look to lodge your tax return and apply for any sort of refunds of any excess tax that you might have paid. All right, guys, any more questions that you've got on your mind at the moment? Okay, good question there from Sonia, just about Labor's proposals. What are the key points? I've actually got up on the screen here beside me that, because that's a quite a big topic of discussion at the moment. So essentially, from a negative gearing point of view, that'll be restricted to newly built housing to apply from the 1st of January 2020. So what that means is, if you're an expat looking at buying property back in Australia and Labor was to get in, then if that purchase goes through after the 1st of January next year, then you would not be able to apply for any sort of allowances on that property unless it was a brand new property. They're also talking about a reduction in capital gains discounts down to 25%. As most on the call would be aware, currently if you bought an investment property, held it for longer than 12 months and then sold it, then what would happen there is you would only pay tax on half the gains. Under Labor's proposal, that would come down to 25%. Franking credits are the big one, obviously with respect to retirement and super. So with respect to the franking credit announcements, essentially what Labor wants to do is remove the excess refund of franking credits to those in the allocated pension in it when they're in super of an excess amount. So say, for example, you earned, let's call it $30,000 in income in your super fund in retirement, and you might have had $5,000 worth of franking credits that you've accrued that were attaching to the income that was paid to you as part of that $30,000 up until now, and will continue if the Liberals do get in, but you would get a cash refund every year. Under Labor's proposal, none of that would occur. To us, it's a big deal, but it's not. We've already found solutions that enable us to still be able to pass those credits through for clients, which we think is still fair. And the reason being is the way a franking credit works is it's tax paid at a rate of 30% by the company that has paid the tax. So essentially what it means is if ANZ, let's say, for example, they declare a $1 billion profit, so they'll cut a check to the ATO for $300 million, which is 30%, and that allows them with $700 million to pass on to their shareholders. So when they pass that money on to the shareholders, the way the franking credit works is it avoids the ATO double taxing that $1 billion. So what it means is of that $700 million that gets passed on to shareholders, tax is being paid on your behalf by the ANZ in this case, up to a rate of 30%. So when it comes through, you can then apply that, and if you're an Australian tax resident and you were on a marginal tax rate of 30% at the time as well, then you would not pay any tax on that income. Just the fact that there's a small percentage of superannuants who get that back doesn't mean we should change the whole system and have a two-tiered approach. Let's be honest, the person that that brought in the franking credits was Mr. Keating himself, and we believe it's still a fair and ethical way to avoid the double taxation of the same pool of money. Whether it gets through or not, that'll depend on the whether the Liberals, the Labor Party gets in next month. So certainly we'll keep everyone posted on that there. Okay, guys, is there any other questions before we wrap up for the afternoon and evening? Okay, now everyone's saying thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Fantastic, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And once again, we'll be keeping everyone posted and updated on all of these issues. If you do have any questions, by all means, email us at info@atlaswealth.com.au. And we look forward to talking to everyone shortly. Take care.